So this week's edition, I'm going to be joined by the author of many books on the monkeys. It is Andrew Sandoval. He's going to be joining us in just moments. And we're also going to be joined by the one and only Mickey Dolenz from the Monkees. Yes, we're going to be joined by Mickey Dolenz. And you know, if you're a listener of this show, past couple of years been ranting and raving why the monkeys are not in the Rock Hall. You know, I'm going to ask Mickey. Got to hear from the source itself what he thinks of them not being in the Rock Hall. We're also going to talk about his new album, 7A Records announces the release of Dolenz Sings Nesmith, Mickey Dolenz's first new solo studio album in 9 years. The album is comprised of songs, obviously, from Michael Nesmith that he wrote throughout his career, all beautifully reimagined. And it's produced by Nesmith's son, Christian. And this is the album the Monkees fans have been waiting for a long time. And of course, the Monkees, you know, from the television series from the 1960s. And as a recording group, though, the Monkees have sold more than 65 million albums worldwide and outsold the Beatles and the Rolling Stones between 1967 and 1968. So before we welcome our first guest, Andrew Sandoval, I want you to kick back and really understand and take in how legendary the Monkees really are.
Down the street is trying hard to learn their song. Serenade, the weekend squire just came out to mow his lawn.
Another Pleasant Valley Sunday. Charcoal burning everywhere. Rose of houses that are all the same.
Don't be slow.
Cause I'm leaving in the morning and I must see you again. We'll have one more night together till the morning brings my train and I must go. And I don't know if I'm ever coming home. Then I saw her face. Now I'm a believer. Not a trace of doubt in my mind. I'm in love. Now I'm a believer. I couldn't leave her if I tried.
So joining us on the Music Vibes podcast, we got Andrew Sandoval, who's the author of many books on the Monkees, and he's done so many other things that I know we want to highlight today as well. We got Andrew joining us here on the podcast. Andrew, what's going on? Thank you for joining.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you for having me on.
Oh, absolutely. It's been well in the making that we've needed to make this happen, as I am a huge fan of the Monkees. So let's start there. Of course, you have a lot of association with the Monkees, some great books to promote, but let's start off there. How exactly are you associated with the Monkees, Andrew?
Well, for the last 30 years, I have been involved in their story, both as the primary producer on the reissues, meaning, you know, all the redone versions of their records, both on vinyl and CD and even digital. And then about 10 years ago, I got involved in their concert tours and producing those. So I got the members of the group back together. And about 15 years ago, I wrote a book on the Monkees called The Monkees, The Day-by-Day Story, and that's being reissued now by my own book imprint, and it's been expanded to 740 pages. It's cripplingly huge and heavy. So it goes through all the Monkees' recording sessions and all of their TV filming dates and all kinds of interviews I've done with them over the past 33 years. So I'm very associated with the Monkees, that, and those are the various facets of it.
You are the man. And one thing you failed to mention, though, as I look at your Twitter profile, Grammy-nominated producer and host of Come to the Sunshine. Tell us about that, man.
Well, I was nominated for a Grammy 10 years ago for a compilation I did for Rhino Records called Los Angeles Nuggets 1965 to 1968. And that is part of this Nugget series. I don't know if your listeners know all about Nuggets. It started in 1973 through Elektra Records, but it basically captured a bunch of sort of garage and 1960s obscurities, not really even one-hit wonders, it's kind of no-hit wonders, but just the whole idea that there's so many other great records from the 1960s that we are still discovering to this day. And that series has kind of continued on. And this box set that I did was about my hometown, Los Angeles, and the great bands. We had 99 different bands, 101 tracks, including The Byrds, Buffalo Springfield, The Doors, and a lot more people you've never heard of. But that's one of my proudest achievements, is that box set, and it was recognized by NARIS, and that's very nice. And then also I host a radio show, which is sort of based on the same premise as the box set. I did a compilation years ago in 2004, I think, called Come to the Sunshine, and it was about sort of the more of the soft pop, production pop sort of stuff that came out from the 1960s. And I started that on an internet station called Luxury, and I moved it about 4 or 5 years ago to WFMU in New York. So it's on Monday nights, every Monday, from WFMU's Rock and Soul radio stream.
That's awesome, man. Yeah, definitely wanted to highlight that. I hope there's a way I can check it out. Is it available online to stream?
Yes, it is. You can stream it from WFMU Rock and Soul Radio,
okay,
or you can look for it via other podcast, people. It's up there through most of the various different ways you'd want to listen to it. So
okay.
I won't list them all.
I hear you. Yeah. Yeah, definitely want to check that out. So thanks for that. And so you mentioned, obviously, that you've been, producing for some of the reissues for the Monkees. And I wanted to highlight one, because as we talk today on May 27th, we got to go back to a ways, but it was released on this date back in 2016. Now, it was recorded in 67, 68, and 69. But, of course, the 12th studio album, Good Times. So we're celebrating an anniversary, so to speak, here today. So tell us a little bit about the album Good Times.
Well, Good Times is a record that was kind of conceived by Rhino, who owned the name The Monkees and the catalog of The Monkees. And they want to do a new album of Monkees songs with the producer, Adam Schlesinger, who just passed away this last year, sadly, COVID. But he was in The Fountains of Wayne, and a great songwriter, also did That Thing You Do, which most people have heard. Mm-hmm. And they want to do all new recordings. And then Mickey Dolenz and myself had thought about all of the unfinished Monkees recordings that were in the vaults. So we kind of had a big meeting, and I played them a bunch of these backing tracks, and Adam decided to finish a handful of those, and then we also drafted in a bunch of songwriters. I had met Andy Partridge from XTC when I was a teenager. I wrote an article about XTC in my fanzine, interviewed him and the other guys in the group, and reached out to him for a song. We got a song from Rivers Cuomo. We got a song from Ben Gibbard of Death Cab for Cutie. We got all these great songs, and then we complemented them with great songs that were unfinished from the 60s by Boyce and Hart and Neil Diamond, and even Michael Nesmith came on board and had some great stuff too. So, and Peter Tork was with us for that, and we finished up a Davy Jones track. It really was a very successful record, and was their first big charting record since 1968. So it was really kind of a wonderful celebration when that came out last, 5 years ago.
Yep, I agree. That's why I wanted to highlight it. Good Times. If you haven't checked it out, check it out now. 5 years since it was been released. So definitely want to talk about this book. Now, this is one of the huge reasons I brought you on. So correct me if I'm wrong, but it was first published in 2005, right?
That's
Monkees,
correct.
The Day by Day Story. So walk us through the Day by Day Story book series.
Right. Well, these Day by Day books are quite common. The first one I knew about was the Beatles, Mark Lewisohn, Complete Beatles Chronicle. He also did the Beatles recording sessions, and I was really fascinated by those. Those came out in the 80s. And, he went day by day and broke down all the details of what they were doing. And I just started accumulating information on the Monkees in the late 80s, early 90s, and realized I could do the same thing. But it took me about 15 years to finish the book because it was a mammoth task as far as the research was concerned. Now, 15 years later, I owned the rights to the book again, and I decided, I'd put it out again, and I started on my way to put it together and maybe, touch up a few things, correct a few things and put it back out because it's out of print and, goes on eBay for much more money than it was originally sold for. Well, what happened was some people reached out to me and they said, hey, we have some other stuff. You might like this. And it turned out to be there were all these court depositions, which, you know, I wasn't sure how interesting they would be, but they had to do with this lawsuit between Don Kirshner and the creators of the Monkees. Now, for your listeners who don't know who Don Kirshner is, he was a A&R person and a music publisher who basically built a stable of some of the greatest songwriters of the 1960s, Jerry Goffin and Carole King, Barry Mann and Cynthia Weil, Tommy Boyce and Bobby Hart, Neil Diamond, all these, you know, Harry Nilsson, all these great songwriters were under his umbrella. And he was the guy who crafted the first two Monkees records, The Monkees and More of the Monkees, in 1966. Now, as 1967 turned around and the Monkees were on the top of the charts, the Monkees wanted to play their own music and be the musicians on their records because they'd been heavily criticized and they also had the capability of doing it. And he was not as into that. He thought that it would lead to their downfall. So there ultimately was a standoff between the two parties, and he lost. And the Monkees got the rights to play on their own records, and they made headquarters in Pisces Aquarius, Capricorn and Jones Limited in 1967, which, you know, were very successful records still. But he had a lawsuit, and in that lawsuit that was held in 1967 and went into 1968, there were all these depositions, which were never made public, where they discussed the origins of the Monkees and all the ins and outs of how those records were made in incredible detail. And just before COVID, I went out to New York and looked at more than 2,000 pages of legal documents relating to the Monkees and their creation. And so all of a sudden, I had a very different book on my hands. I had a whole rewritten history. And so because I was in lockdown, I decided to rewrite the entire book. And it went from about a 300-page book to a 740-page book. And no publisher would ever touch that. But I knew Monkees fans would want it. So I've put it out myself, and it's available for pre-order from my company, beatlandbooks.com. And I've gone through quite a few. I've got pre-orders for almost 2,000 copies now. So it's just a limited edition book for the people who are really into it. It's a serious commitment. It's not a casual read. Takes up a lot of space, and there's no digital version of it or anything like that. So, but it has over 1,500 illustrations and interviews with all four of the Monkees. They're exclusive, as well as recording information. Every session musician who played on the Monkees records, I researched with the unions and all the filming dates and all kinds of other minutia. It goes from the birth of Peter Tork in 1942 to their basic breakup in 1970, and includes all of the details on Michael Nesmith's First National Band that occurred that year as well.
Wow. I cannot wait. I cannot wait till July. We're getting closer and closer. It's a little bit over a month from now. I got to get my hands on this. This sounds absolutely fantastic. So we're getting
ready
to be
space on your bookshelf and maybe reinforce it.
That's right. That's right. It's waiting. So we got Mickey Dolenz joining us in just a few moments. So you've interviewed them throughout the years. What were some of your personal favorite moments with your interviews with the band?
Well, you know, it's changed a lot since the first interview I did with Davy Jones when I was a teenager. And, you know, I got more comfortable and relaxed with them. And I think that has led to them being more open with me over the years. We did a lot of great DVD commentaries. When we did a reissue of the movie Head that they did with Jack Nicholson in 1968 for Criterion Collection, I did full-length interviews with all four of them for that movie, commentaries in different locations where they were kind of spread out around the globe at that time. And, you know, those were kind of condensed down to just one track by Criterion, which Criterion did a beautiful job of it. But I had all the raw interviews of those too, and some of that stuff's in my book. So I think those are some of the best interviews I ever did with them. But, you know, traveling with them, going on tour with them, which is something I never imagined I would do, but just happened, you know, which is basically from 2011 to now, because we're going to go on a farewell tour with Michael Nesmith and Mickey Dolenz from September to November of 2021. Around the United States. Those have been the best times when I've gotten the most interesting stuff. Just in offhanded things, you know, Michael Nesmith telling me in the airport, hey, you know, the first gig I ever played was, you know, at a nurse's convention, and they paid me in food. You know, they didn't pay me money.
Wow.
Things like that. Or, you know, Mickey Dolenz, we land in Denver, and he said, oh, this is the place where I played my first out-of-town gig. You know, stuff that would come up that I would never think about asking, that just came up. So, I mean, those have been the best times to talk to them about different things.
Yeah, that's amazing. I'm glad you mentioned the tour as well, because I'm going to be asking about that. I'm going to keep my eye out for some Midwest dates. You can go ahead, feel free to slip me a message if you know any Midwest dates. I ain't going to tell nobody, I promise. Just let me know.
We have a few. We've got a few in the Midwest, in Milwaukee and Minnesota and Ohio. And
there we go.
Outside of Chicago and
St. Louis,
in Kansas City. And I think we're even going to come to Salinas, Kansas, in there, that hasn't been announced yet. But yeah,
wow.
we the Monkees, and also Detroit too.
The
Monkees have a huge fan base in the Midwest, and we always hit there, but we never seem to hit enough places. And with this schedule, we weren't even sure if the tour was going to happen because of COVID.
Right.
And now it seems like things are all opening up, but we also have to be careful because everybody's getting older, and we just have to make it through all the dates. So we can't put in too many dates, so we are missing a few places, sadly. But, you know, we hope that people will come out and see us, maybe make a special trip for us, because we're making a special trip about 8 or 9 weeks.
I was going to say, any show you do this year is a special trip. So I'm going to show my appreciation for making either the Chicago, Ohio, or Detroit date. So appreciate that, man. That's awesome.
Great.
Very excited for that.
Love
so I'll keep... I'll keep in touch on that and let you know as soon as the dates come out. But before I let you go and promote the book one more time, so I'm going to be asking Mickey, because I've been ranting and raving on this podcast for the last couple of years. Pretty much, I did a podcast on the unfortunate passing of Peter Tork, and I was joined by my buddy Randy Lewis from the LA Times.
Right.
And we were reflecting on Peter, and I think that was my epiphany, just thinking like, wait a second. Why the hell are the Monkees not in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame? You know, I'm looking at the list and I'm like, are you serious? Like, this is real? And it just kind of, as a big fan of the Monkees and just, you know, the journalist in me, you know, I get kind of upset about it. I just don't understand. So I'm definitely going to be asking Mickey about it. But where do you stand with it?
Well, it's funny. I did an interview with Rolling Stone this year about my book, and we talked about it for that because it's been a hot topic, and Peter, of course, in his lifetime, talked about it a great deal. And people always felt that it was Jan Wenner, who was the editor of Rolling Stone, no longer the editor of Rolling Stone, but he was one of the main people behind the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And I don't think he's as involved as he used to be, that was keeping them out. And it's funny, when I was doing research for my book, I found that he had met the Monkees in 1969 and said that he liked them quite a bit when he met them in Rolling Stone. So you never know. I mean, there's all these myths that sort of get built up. But what I told Rolling Stone, I'm going to tell you now and your listeners, is that if the Monkees get inducted in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, or even nominated, it's not just for the four guys who are definitely deserving of the accolade. It's for everybody who was behind the Monkees. It's for Don Kirshner. It's for Carol King. It's for Jerry Goffin. It's for Boyce and Hart. It's for Harry Nilsson.
Mm-hmm.
Neil Sedaka, you know, Carol Bayer, Jeff Barry, all these incredible producers, songwriters. And then it's also for the incredible people who worked on the television show. Bob Rafelson and Bert Schneider created this incredible thing. And there's been lots of things like the Monkees since then. It's just that people misunderstood the Monkees.
Mm-hmm.
And the main thing that the criticism that was leveled against them, in all the research I've done and looking at this, they said the Monkees did not pay their dues, and that's why we don't like them, or why they're not valid. And the reality is, when you look in my book and you see everything they did from their childhood up to 1965 when they got their roles, they were struggling. They all paid their dues. They all played on stage. They all were out there playing music. They were all musical. They weren't four actors or four musicians or two actors and two musicians. They were all interested in all those things. And they just didn't pay their dues as a unit together.
Mm-hmm.
They were catapulted into success. But just look at the Beatles. They accepted the Monkees, and they thought they were really cool and very nice people, and they invited them into their world.
Mm-hmm.
And the Beatles didn't do that with many people. So,
no.
I, you know, the Monkees are completely valid, and it's time that, you know, we all stop being ashamed of our love of them. And Peter Tork was one of the best people that I ever got to meet in my life. I spent loads of time with them, toured with them, even as a solo artist.
Mm-hmm.
And we, you know, I miss him every day.
Absolutely.
I just think about him every day. I wish I could pick up the phone. When I finish this phone call, I wish I could pick up the phone and call him and say hi and ask him some trivia. Because we would talk all the time, and I just, I love him so much.
Absolutely. I'm really glad you felt the same way, because I've done a couple episodes on just that alone, just expressing mm-hmm. my frustration. So it's good to know. I'm going to have to ask Mickey that. Maybe a good idea, may not be a good idea, but we'll see how it goes. So very, very excited to get digging on this book. I'm going to include a link for people to be able to check it out and pre-order it. It'll be available in July. You know, the day-by-day story of the Monkees. You did a lot of hard work and grit and grind into this book, and people need to show you some love for it. So really appreciate the book and appreciate you for coming on, Andrew.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Anytime. I'd love to talk to you anytime about any topic in music that you want to talk about.
Hello.
Hello, is this Mickey Dolenz?
It is.
Hey, it's DC Hendrix. How you doing today, Mickey?
Pretty good. Pretty good, as a matter of fact. I'm out here in Southern California. It's actually a pretty lousy day. It's 75, clear and sunny.
Ah, wow, that's weird. I'm in Indiana. We got the same weather. That is pretty lousy for Cali.
Oh, actually, you're in good shape. But it gets humid there in the summer, right?
It does. It does. It gets a little warm. Gets a little warm.
Yeah. Well, we can get warm here up to 105, but it's a dry heat, as they say.
That's right. And I definitely am very excited to have you on the Music Vibes podcast right now as I travel back and celebrate classics and create new ones on my podcast. And I'm a younger guy, but I definitely enjoy a lot of the music way before my time. And you obviously date back to way before my time, but your music is so timeless. And even today, still releasing new albums, your first one, your new solo studio album in 9 years. What made you come out of this pandemic and come out with the new album?
It's a bit of a long story, meaning it took place over decades, and it started as you probably read, if you read the liner notes, my dearly beloved friend Harry Nilsson, the singer-songwriter, back in the late 60s, early 70s, we were best friends at the time, and he recorded an album called Nilsson Sings Newman, the songs of Randy Newman, another great singer-songwriter, and I always thought it was a cool idea. And then fast forward four decades or something, and I was in rehearsals with Mike Nesmith and Peter Tork, rehearsing for a tour after Davey had passed away. And I said to Nez, you know, I always liked this idea of doing Dolan Sings Nesmith. And he said, well, I like that idea too. I got some songs for you. But it went on the back burner. We toured. I think I went away and did a musical in England, and then we toured again. We did another album with Adam Schlesinger and the Good Times album. And then 7A Records, a UK company, said, is there something you'd like to do? And I said, yeah, I've always wanted to do Dolan Sings Nesmith. And they jumped at the idea, and we got Christian Nesmith, Mike's son, to produce and mix and play, and he did an incredible job, I think, of re-envisioning these songs, Mike's songs.
Absolutely, and I think I agree that this is just enjoying that one.
Oh, great. Thank you.
Absolutely. This album is really good, Mickey. I am really excited for Monkees fans to hear this new album. So I guess, you know, for a long time, as we travel back a little bit to your last solo, you know, going back to Dolenz Jones, Boyce, and Heart.
Yeah.
So that goes back a ways, as well as actually in 2 days. So we're recording on May 27th, and Dolenz Jones, Boyce, and Heart came out May 29th, 1976. So approaching that anniversary. So travel back with me to that, as I know, you know, that group didn't last a whole lot. I think it was just that year, to be as a matter of fact, in 76, but put together this fantastic album. Travel back for me and put me in the studio with you.
Well, that was a great album. I still liked a lot of the cuts on that particular album. Well, it was simply that, you know, the Monkees show and Off the Air in 69. And that was basically the end of the Monkees as an act, because, you know, there was no production company anymore. There was no managers or agents or anybody. When a show goes off the air, the cast, you know, you shake hands and say, you know, bye. Davey and I would still hang out a lot because we had kids, you know, and our families were friends and everything. And Boys in Heart, you know, had been such an integral part of the Monkees, you know, not only writing some of the biggest hits, but producing the early stuff and created, you know, we're responsible for creating what is the kind of the sound of the Monkees, Tommy Boyce and Bobby Hart. And so I guess a few years later, I don't remember specifically, but I guess a few years later, it was Tommy and Bobby. I seem to remember they said to Davey and I, hey, you know, why don't we put together a new group, and we'll call it Dolan Jones, Boyce and Hart, and mm-hmm. it'll be the guys that sang them and the guys that wrote them.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, we got some interest from a record company, a Capitol, and and off we went.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, of course you got interest. Who wouldn't be interested in that? Yeah, I wanted to travel back with you on that, as you know, like I said, I'm a huge fan. So going back to the early days as well means a lot. But Headquarters, we're about a little bit over a week of that anniversary back in 67, a little bit before my time, I guess, a little bit. So huge fan of this album as well. So take me back. Obviously, we're going to the 60s here for Headquarters. Take me back and travel back and hit that time machine for the third album issued by the Monkees.
Well, that was and is a very, very special Monkees album because, as you probably know, mm-hmm. Up until that point, we had had very little to say, very little control, very little input mm-hmm. on what was going to be recorded. Little or no input
mm-hmm.
On the songs, what was going to be recorded, who was going to sing them, all of it. Now, I personally didn't have a big problem with that because I understood what I was cast to do in the show. I was to play the part of the wacky drummer, and it turned out I ended up singing a lot of the leads, most of the leads on the songs.
Mm-hmm.
And I had no problem. They were incredible songs and still are. These songs by Tommy Boyce and Bobby Hart and Carol King and Jerry Goffin and mm-hmm. Harry Nilsson and Neil Diamond and Paul Williams and Neil Sedaka and,
wow.
you know, incredible, incredible songwriters. And so I didn't have a problem doing that. But there were others, especially like Nez, who was a singer-songwriter, and he wanted to have his material, his songs that he'd written and and wanted to sing. At a certain point, as you know, the story goes, we had a kind of a palace revolt that Nez led, and we got the right, I suppose, to record what we wanted to record and with the songs that we wanted to sing and play on everything, and we did. And that album is Headquarters, and it came out great and went right up to number one. Along with Sergeant Pepper. And, I'm very, very proud of that album. But I'm also very proud of the earlier albums, too.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to mislead anybody. I'm very
absolutely.
Proud of the previous albums. And,
yep.
and I'm also proud of the albums we did after that, too.
As we just travel back a little bit now, I want to have a little fun with you because big Monkees fan, obviously I go back to the early days, like you said, even the albums before Headquarters. And I want to get your opinion on this. So you made all this music throughout the years. I have my personal thought on the most underrated Monkees song of all time. And I say underrated because I feel like everyone knows I'm a believer. Last Train to Clarksville, Pleasant Valley Sunday. Everyone knows the hits. But this one right here is my personal favorite, and it's from the same album as Last Train to Clarksville. I love Take a Giant Step. Oh, my goodness.
As a child, when you woke up and morning smiled, this time you felt like you did. There's is no percentage in remembering the past. It's time you learn to live again at last. Come with me, leave yesterday behind, and take a giant step outside your mind.
I mean, to this day, just so smooth, Mickey. I can't praise that song enough. And for me, that's, in my opinion, the most underrated Monkees song. So coming from you, who's made these songs, which song did you record that you thought, I thought possibly that could have been a bigger hit than it actually ended up being?
Well, it's interesting you should pick that song out, because that song was in I don't know what you call it, in the running. It's the B-side of the single. Clarksville became the single, and that would have been a decision that we had nothing to do with.
Right.
That would have been a decision by the record company. But Take a Giant Step was, I believe, I'm sure of this, was touted to be the single, the first single. It was between that and Clarksville. And somewhere up in the ivory tower of the record company executives, they went with Clarksville. Who knows why? But Take a Giant Step was the other side, was the other song that was touted to be the single.
Wow.
We have done that, and I have done that constantly for decades, and not only Monkees shows. I don't ever remember a Monkees show, concert, tour, that we did not do Take a Giant Step. And I do it in my solo show, always.
So I wanted to ask you this, as I've heard a lot of rumors, as my last name has no association. I'm not related. We do share the same last name, but I do remember some early day news articles about you guys and the tour with the one and only Jimi Hendrix. Now, I want to get this straight from you, because obviously papers are written, articles are written from biased opinions. So coming straight from you, can you recap that tour for me?
Yeah, I mean, I've told the story. It's pretty well known now. I first saw Jimmy before he was Jimi Hendrix, as it were. He was Jimmy James, and he was a sideman in the Village. I saw him playing, and I believe it was with John Hammond, acting up John Hammond. And I remember just being told, hey, well, I was in New York, I guess, and somebody said, you got to come down and hear, see John Hammond. And he has this great guitar player who plays guitar with his teeth. And that's how I remember being introduced, you know. And I remember going down, and I remember seeing the band. And I remember, sure enough, there was this kid, probably a little bit older than I was, playing guitar with his teeth. And that was it. And then obviously he went to the UK, and Chas Chandler put together the Jimi Hendrix Experience with Mitch and Noel. But it wasn't until Monterey Pop Festival that I was there, and all of a sudden this incredible act comes on stage, and I recognized him. I said, hey, that's the guy that plays guitar with his teeth. And of course, it was amazing. Act blew everybody away. And at the time, coincidentally, we were looking for an opening act for the tour, our first worldwide Monkees tour. I recommended Jimmy and the Experience to our producers, and I guess they liked the idea, and our producers liked the idea, and they made a deal. And sure enough, a few weeks or whatever it was later, months later, he was the opening act for the Monkees. And, you know, it must have been tough, as it always is for the opening act of a headliner, especially when our fans were basically 12-year-old girls. And but we loved it. Nesmith and I remember specifically would sit, stand in the wings and just, you know, be in awe. It was Awe, Oklahoma, I think. No, we were in Awe, and then we hung out a lot, you know, off stage. He was a lovely, quiet, very quite shy individual, and very unlike his persona on stage. But so was my good friend Alice Cooper. Mm-hmm. Alice was one of my best friends, and well, still is.
Mm-hmm.
But his persona on stage was nothing like what he is, you know, in real life. And Jimmy was like that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And we would just hang out and play around and, you know, jam in the hotel room and stuff. But it was tough, you know. You hear those stories all the time about opening acts for mm-hmm. for the headliner. Like, I remember seeing Guns N' Roses open for the Stones before Ooh. They were really well known, and they got totally booed off.
Yeah,
the
stage. I remember
and
that.
It happens, and yeah. But then Jimmy broke his record, his single, first single, I guess, and started headlining himself, and you know. I'm quite sure that Jimi Hendrix would have been just fine with or without the Monkees. But I'd like to think that maybe he got, you know, helped with a little bit of a leg up.
Yeah, him opening for the Monkees back in 1967. And then all of a sudden he's the big superstar. And then after that, you know, he's all over the place. I definitely wanted to travel back. So got one more question, and I want to get to your new album before I let you go. So one more question.
Okay.
I've been ranting and raving. As listeners know on this podcast, I've been ranting and raving over the past couple of years. I've expressed my frustration with the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame for the last couple of years. And, you know, I'm just going to say this, and you obviously will have the floor yourself, but I just don't understand why the Monkees are not in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. I really don't see any logical explanation. And then you can't, and then you look at the people that are getting inducted. Mickey, I know you, like, it's really frustrating. It really is for me, as big of a Monkee fan as I am. So, you know, everyone has their opinion. I know I interviewed Gene Simmons from Kiss before, and he obviously is not very happy with the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame either. But, you know, coming from you yourself, and the listeners are finally excited to hear this as well, where do you stand with the Monkees not being in the Rock Hall?
Well, I'll be quite honest, very frank. I've never chased awards.
Mm-hmm.
Or anything like that. Never.
Mm-hmm.
I was thrilled to have the Monkees win two Emmys.
Mm-hmm.
As a child of television, that was to me sort of the pinnacle of success is winning two Emmys. But I've never chased that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And if it happens, it's wonderful. If it doesn't, it just doesn't mean much to me one way or the other. I'm very flattered over the years, the decades,
mm-hmm.
fans have started petitions and they've, you know, lobbied to get the Monkees in the Hall of Fame. But I've always known the Hall of Fame, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, by the way, is a wonderful organization.
It is, yes.
I've done a lot of charity work for the charity branch of the Hall of Fame, raising money, playing golf, and doing different charity events for the Hall of Fame.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great organization, but most people don't understand that it's a private organization. It's not like, let's say, the football, you know, what do you call the NFL? It represents every single team, you know, in the country.
Right.
But the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame was started by three guys in the business. Well, two in the music business and one in the in journalism, as we know. And it started out as a private club, like a private country club, let's say. And these gentlemen who started the club said, you know, basically, we're going to start a private club called the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And we are going to let into our club whoever we want. And we're not going to let into the club anybody we don't want. And that's basically what it is. It's like a country club, you know, and they say we're going to let let these particular people into our country club, and we're not going to let these people into our country club. It's not a public vote. It's not democratic in any way. And so that's their right. That's their, they, you know, that's their prerogative. It's their private club, and they have the right to let in whoever they want.
Well
Simple
said.
As that.
Well said. Mickey Dolenz of the Monkees joining us here. The brand new album, Dolenz Sings Nesmith, the songs of Michael Nesmith, performed by his longtime friend and, of course, Monkees colleague. Definitely be sure to get this new album. I'm loving it. Like I said, different drum, one of my personal favorites. Marie's Theme, Little Red Rider, Nine Times Blue. Yeah. Oh, man, this new album.
Yeah. Oh, man, thank you so much.
Yes, this new album is absolutely fantastic. Get it. It sold out on Amazon pretty quickly, so that's good news.
No kidding.
Yeah, it's doing really well. Everyone's perceiving it really well. There's going to be some new copies for now. You can get it on CD and streaming services as well. Spotify, been listening to over the last couple of days. You guys do the same. Appreciate you for letting us play some of these songs on the podcast. It sounds so good, Mickey. And I wanted to say this too. So the Monkees TV show, I'm going to petition for that as well to get on, get you guys a nice streaming deal and get that on Netflix or Amazon or Hulu or something like that. Get you guys some younger viewers. That's a great television show.
Yeah, it was fun. It was a great little show.
Absolutely. So Mickey Dolenz, thank you so much for joining us on the Music Vibes podcast. You take care. Keep putting out this great music, and I hope to see you on tour soon.
Okay. Thank you so much for your time.
All right. Thank you. See you, Mickey.
Okay. Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye.
Time Travel with DC Hendrix on the Music Vibes podcast. You can subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and Spotify on your mobile device.